Blog Talk Radio.
To the show that never ends. Hey, everybody, welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and tonight on Applause Radio Show, we have a great guest, Jude Warren. She's a rock journalist, author, and we're going to talk about her new book, America the Band, an Authorized Biography. But before we get started, let me just say thank you to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kitnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey. Those T-shirts are available on our website. Syntech Productions in Oka Harbor, New Jersey, Oleander Public Relations in Texas, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, The Observer Newspaper, Joey Max Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey, and our new member of our family, GenieBottles.com. And I got to mention this because I just saw it posted. Artist Mario Della Casa, who is the creator of, well, he's not the creator of the Genie bottle, but he is the creator of the bottles at geniebottle.com. He's the artist. He is doing a phenomenal special, $99, but you got to, it's like almost a contest, $99 autographed by Barbara Eden. And these bottles are gorgeous, and they range from many, many prices. I think the one that he's giving away for $99 is worth like $1,500. So that's fabulous. So I believe we have Jude on the line. Jude, is that you? Hello? Jude? Jude, is that you on the line? Hello? Hey, Jude, is that you? Jude. Well, we're waiting for Jude. Let me see. Hold on. Jude, are you there? Hello? Well, while we wait for Jude, I thought I had her on the phone here. I don't know, maybe she had to grab another call. We will talk about what's going on. I have to mention this. I'm going to mention it later as well on my social. Be careful out there, folks. These are desperate times for a lot of people, and, you know, desperate people do desperate things. So be safe, and specifically the holidays are coming too. People get very desperate around that time anyway, and, you know, a lot of people are out of work, unfortunately. So, you know, just I can't believe it. Literally, like, four blocks from my house, a couple was kidnapped and taken to an ATM to take money out of the Chase Bank. I couldn't believe it. It's just insane. I mean, again, desperate times, folks. So be very careful. Just be vigilant. Stay aware of your surroundings and lock your doors, lock your windows. And again, people are desperate. And can you blame them? So I think we have Jude on the phone again. Hang on one moment.
Hey.
Let's see if this is Jude. Hey, Jude, is that you?
Yes, it's me. Hi.
Hey, Jude. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I called before, and we couldn't hear each other, but I was saying hello and excited to be there.
Yeah,
so.
I was
hello.
Saying hello,
so
too.
Excited.
I was saying hello, too.
I can
too.
Tell you can hear me, I know.
Yeah, well, thank you for calling back. I appreciate it,
oh, sure.
And I truly appreciate you coming on the show. I thank you so much, and I'm very interested in the book. You're going to hate me. I haven't read it yet, but I'm an America fan, so,
yeah.
You know, we do have something to talk about. But I'm curious, out of all the bands you could have written about, why America? What was the reason behind it?
I think I was very captivated by their quality, their cultural quality, what I interpreted that to be, and how when I did research in terms of the critical content that was out there on them, it was very just not explored enough, in my opinion, of each album in terms of analysis and stuff. And since that's what I had done in the past, and that's what I'd like to do, analyze records as like a piece of art in a way. I figured
right,
it would be
you're
a great combination.
You're also a music journalist critic for some publications as well.
I started out doing film reviews in college of different films and film books, and then I got more into the rock arena and the classic rock scene from the 70s and 80s and stuff. And so it seemed like an ideal match. And then I write for this magazine, this online magazine, The Vinyl District, now and then. And I got
uh-huh.
to interview Jerry actually in 2016 for his Carousel album, and it was such a great interview. And I got the idea of just wanting to, or I developed the idea of wanting to write a full length book about the band and their whole 50-year career, and then it kind of took off from there. That was the very beginning.
Right. Now it's an unauthorized biography, so do you know if they read it? Did you get any content from them at all? I mean, any type of influence in speaking to them personally, or?
It is an authorized biography, so they were involved in it from the beginning, pretty much. So it's we worked together on the interviews. I did about 18 months of interviews with them.
I thought it was unauthorized. I apologize. It's authorized, so forget the question. Absolutely, you dealt with them. Oh,
that's okay.
Don't mind me. It's been a rough. It's been a. What is it? September. This is October. I'm still getting over quarter end.
I know.
It's been
a rough year.
It's been horrible. It's been horrible. So I'm sorry. So yeah. So you got a lot of your information from them then.
Yeah, that was so fortunate for me, and then I like to view it because of that as a kind of collaborative project where a lot of, and if people read the book, they'll see that there are a lot of direct quotes taken from just our interviews, and I wanted the reader to get the feeling like they were hanging out with Jerry and Dewey reminiscing, and that, to have that personal touch and not just my opinion of their career on albums, which
right.
I did put in there as well, but I thought that was a nice balance there.
Nice, nice. Now, you mentioned in your bio that your parents are rock and rollers. Are they in the industry, or they just love rock?
They do love rock a lot, but they were, since their childhoods too, 60s, 70s and stuff, but since they got together in the late 70s and they're still together, all they do, or so much of what they do, is go to these great concerts, and they were there at that pivotal era too, when all these great acts, these classic acts, were still performing in the current moment.
Right.
So they spent so much time at concerts and stuff. And I was kind of raised on record albums where they were treated with importance in the house in a nice way, like the pieces of art that I think they are. But it always had this positive but serious tone, which I loved, and I kind of still have that feeling about certain classic albums from that era.
So you love rock too, then. You're a big rock head.
Yeah,
too,
I'm a huge
so
rock
now,
guy. I just love that sound.
Right. Now, but what made you go towards America, since they are more of folk rock? You know, they're not rock.
Yeah.
You know, so what
you're right,
I got to know what really piqued you to go towards America. I mean, you could have picked any band to write about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. They're definitely a softer rock, folk rock act overall. I think I was drawn to partly in that they hadn't had an authorized biography yet written about them, other than Dan Peek's really nice autobiography that he wrote, which was about his time in the band and then about his own life, but kind of cut off in terms of the band story at 77 when he left. And there was so much more that had happened with the band and their story that I kind of wanted to, or I sensed the opportunity to be able to detail that part of the band's career. So that motivated me, as well as they reminded me of the Beatles a lot in terms of the color of their, you know, their album sound overall, their positivity and the emphasis on love, peace, and rock and roll in their material that really carried out too until present day. That positivity is in there, and I wanted to be able to talk about that and articulate that.
Well, you're going to think this is crazy. I consider myself, I don't want to say a connoisseur, but I do know a lot about bands and music, but I had no idea. I had no idea that they were from Britain or from England. And I mean, with a name like America, I assumed they were a couple of guys from the United States.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I mean, that's such an interesting part of their story for sure. They are technically American guys, but they were, since they were Air Force kids, Air Force brats, some people like to call them,
they were stationed
at the time when they met in London. So they have that really intense British influence from their formative years and when the band first got together. But they have that American heritage in there and then moving to America pretty quickly after they made it. But that combination of influences from both nations is so interesting. And you're right, like the name America is such a great nod to their heritage, and at the time they came out, I think too it denoted like the quality of the Crosby, Stills, and Nash acoustic sound that was really popular at that time, that they had a lot of in their sound. It communicated that to people, which was great.
I think they were, like you said, I think they were trying to throw people off, to not let them know they were Brits, you know, that they were from America. So, I mean, I'm guessing, you know. Well, I got to ask, I know Dan Peake's passed, but did he ever get back into the band when they were, you know, with the nostalgia touring and all that? Did he ever come back, or no, he just pretty much went solo?
Yeah, he never really came back. There had been rumors of that happening pretty much since the time that he left, mostly that they potentially could get back together or do a show together again, and it never really came together. And I think Jerry and Dewey, I know, worked very hard to in a sense, to recreate their sound after he left, using the essential elements that were already there that were established with Dan, which is so important. But I think they really worked hard to make themselves a duo that could be reckoned with. And they succeeded at that. And I think once they had developed that new sound, and if you think about it too, they've been a duo since 77, which is 40 or so years. I mean, it's a very long time.
Right.
They've been a duo longer than the trio, while the trio was how they first formed, of course. And that's incredibly important, as I said. But I think they wanted to see what they could do with that duo kind of sound. And they had, in a sense, reinvented the band.
Yeah, well, I was thrilled for them when they came out with You Can Do Magic in 82. I think it was 82.
Yeah.
In the 80s, I don't know the exact year, so I'll say the 80s. I was really thrilled for them that they made a comeback. That was great, you know.
I love that comeback story. It's fantastic. And in my book, I try to make that, or I intended to, that's such a pivotal plot point in the band's story where, and they're so young to have that kind of comeback in quotes too, but it really was in terms of the chart success that they hit, which matched or nearly matched the initial chart success that they had. But it's such a great part of their story. And when you think about how musical sound had changed so much from the early 70s and the acoustic sound of a song like Horse, which was so successful, and then you think about the sound of a song, You Can Do Magic, it's like very different, you know, in terms of the 80s produced sounds that are in there, the technical stuff that's added in. It's still it's a great track. But just how they were able to evolve into the next decade is pretty cool, I thought.
Yeah. Is it true that Horse With No Name originally was named the Desert Song or the Desert or something? I'm trying to recall.
Yeah, that's right. That's
and
exactly
what,
right.
What made them change the name?
I think it was the idea of one of their team, the producer, in terms of, I think there was an opera also at the that exists called Desert Song or something. They were advised to change the name. But if you look at a lot of Dewey's early compositions, so many of them are call songs like Moon Song, Desert Song, just in terms of like the natural element that's addressed in the song, and then song, kind of that literal title, which I thought was pretty cool. And that matches there too in Desert Song.
Yeah, now, like you said, the Desert Songs and Ventura Highway, I mean, did they come up with those after they relocated to L.A., or was that before?
I believe, I mean, the compositions were started or were worked upon, I think, when Dewey was in London, in the British Britain area, and I think there was some kind of nostalgia for the homeland. Dewey had, although all of the band members had grown up within Air Force families, so they moved around a lot, and Dewey had spent some time living in the Southern California area, and I think that the effect of the aesthetics of that landscape, the desert, and then the warm weather and just that whole feeling and the idea that Ventura Highway details, that the effect of that was in him, and then he kind of missed it or was reflecting upon it when he was in Britain, and then that contrast is there, but it's such a great articulation of that idea, and it's fun to think about how it wasn't necessarily written in totality in L.A.
Well, they probably came up with the melody with another street and changed it when they got here or something, you know. Who knows, right? But do we know why Dan Peek left the band? Or is the autobiography an American band that he wrote? Is it true? Or I mean, I'm sure there's several stories going around why he actually left the band.
Yeah, it was a bit of a mutual decision in terms of Dan wanted to spend some time just on his own, getting back to his true self. He had also gotten more or found his true religion at that point, his Christian religion, gotten back into that, and wanted some time to kind of, you know, reflect upon that and develop that more. And all of them and everyone in that scene, as we know, I mean, every 70s rock band had been exposed to different partying elements and
all
of the super fun, you know, the toll that it takes on people. So I think it was a kind of mutual kind of decision to take a bit of a rest for Dan anyway.
Yeah. He wanted to walk away from that, right? He wanted to walk away from that, I believe. He wanted to find a Christian, I mean, based on the autobiography that he wrote, I believe that's what he said in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I believe that's the reason, and they chose to pursue their own musical path for a while. But it was a group decision, and that chapter is detailed in the book, which was one of my one of my favorite chapters that I wrote for the book. But it was also, I think, the most difficult chapter that I wrote because I wanted to capture it in the way I saw that it had happened in my perception, and then putting in all the interview materials that I gathered and just kind of recreating that moment and capturing the drama that's in there, because it was very intense and sad in a lot of ways for all three guys, and they were very affected by it, and I wanted to get that because they started out as three best friends. I mean, that was how the band started. The band was almost like after that in a way, and so that initial relationship couldn't be destroyed, and it was in part, you know, not broken ever, but just affected, of course, by the breakup.
Yeah, right. Well, now back to your book. Can you share a story with us to pique our interest in regard to a crazy time they had on a tour? Without giving away the store,
Well, I mean, I think that the chapter about Dan's leaving details what they had all gone through by that point. And also the chapter before that, or a couple before that, there are a lot of each chapter in part is devoted to an album that the band makes, and then detailing a bit of the process that went into that album and analyzing the album. But the Harbor album, which was the last album that the three guys made together, that chapter definitely goes into what they had all been going through at that time, with definitely more partying, less time for recording or attention to recording in the way they had started out. Because for that album, they recorded that in Hawaii, and they had all these great, really fun antics going on at the same time, with a lot of them were learning scuba diving and appreciating the natural landscape and getting into that, and the partying elements, which sounded fun. But just that's you know, that was a hard race with the recording, even working with the great Sir George Martin, which was awesome. And I detail that in the book, but that's definitely a chapter a point in the book that talks about that kind of thing.
Yeah. Was there any talk about lawsuits that maybe Golden Hair may have sounded a little bit like My Sweet Lord in the intro? Was that ever brought up?
There, to my knowledge, I mean, there are no lawsuits surrounding that. But I think I believe Jerry openly acknowledges being influenced by George Harrison, who was actually a friend of theirs, and he was one of the first Beatles they made a nice connection with when they were starting out as recording
right.
artists. But yes, he was definitely influenced by that song, the opening, the riff, and just the general feeling. And then there's a part, one of my favorite parts in the book actually is a part where I believe it's attributed to Jerry, but it's the band talking about how they're so influenced, as all bands are, by their favorite artists, and in a sense, an artist can become a bit of a super group of all of his favorite artists in a way. So there's that, the DNA kind of every artist, if they influence other artists, gets traced down through there, which I like as a side note.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I didn't know that they worked with George Martin. That's fabulous. What songs did he help produce with America when he was working with them?
Well, their first album together was the Holiday record, their fourth album, and that was such a successful record that had Tin Man on it, and just all that was a bit of a turning point. After the Hat Trick album, they had recorded the third record. That was a bit of a downturn, commercially speaking, after their initial success with their first two records. So that's when they first, or at the time when they enlisted a new producer, and they got to work with George. That was so great. But they ended up working together for many albums. I think it was seven. But just throughout the rest of the 70s, they were together, and it was this great collaborative relationship. And it reminded me, as an outside critic looking in, as too close to the relationship that the Beatles had with George Martin in terms of this ongoing partnership where they influenced each other, but allowed each other to be, or George allowed America to be who they were and brought out their best elements and talents, which is so cool.
That's what a good producer does, right? So
Yeah.
Now, I got to say, now, did Mom and Dad meet the guys from the band?
they did after, I mean, following...
They must have been thrilled, huh? They must have been thrilled, huh?
Oh, sure. They were very excited. I mean, we've met other rock artists before, but there's something about Jerry and Dewey, I think, and so many of the fans have gotten the chance to meet them and speak with them for a bit, and I think they know they're so nice and so warm and just really very easy to relate to right away, which is such a great quality as an artist to have with an audience, and that kind of translated over to the one-on-one meeting, which was fun. Yeah, they loved it.
I could imagine, especially if they love music, you know, so it must be it must have been an amazing opportunity, so... I have to ask you, what is your personal favorite song by America?
Oh, man. See, that's tough to answer for anybody. But for me, I start thinking of the songs in terms of Dan, Dewey, and Jerry songs. They usually didn't write together too much in terms of the initial composition. I have to say, one of my favorite America songs is Green Monkey, which is a Dewey Bunnell composition, but the whole band plays on it and sings on it, obviously. But that's one of my favorite rock songs, I think, of the 70s. It's like this classic rock recording that should even be more played and more known, like alongside the Led Zeppelin stuff, in my opinion. And one of my favorite songs, too, by Jerry, which is an America song from the Harbor album, is Monster. I think it's my favorite Jerry Beckley composition, and I just think it's this amazing introspective song, and that's a unique kind of song for Jerry to write if you look at the rest of his catalog. So that's definitely one of my favorites. And Dan's songs, just all of them, really, but It's Life, I think, is probably my favorite. So it's hard to pick just one, but...
Right, I know. I love Golden Hair. I love Lonely People.
Yeah.
I love I Need You. That's another good one. I Need You is a great one.
So good.
Yeah, they're all good. I mean, I'm not a fan like you where, you know, the more obscure ones that did not hit the top 40. You know, I know the ones that hit the top 40, and I don't hate me. I could not stand. I don't know why. It was a great song written. I mean, the writing is fantastic, but I couldn't stand Horse with No Name. It just, when I was growing up, I was like,
no.
God, that song is killing me, you know?
Okay.
You know, we all have one of those, but I just, I mean, it's a great song, don't get me wrong, but at the time, I was young, and I was like, oh, God, do I want to hear this again? Because they played it constantly, you know?
Of course,
like, you know,
I imagine it was everywhere.
And it was like, is the song going to end, you know? but I don't know. I don't know. Do you know the story behind Tin Man? What made them decide to write something themed of The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, I think it's the book, the original Wizard of Oz book, is something that Dewey's always liked. And his lyrics in general, a lot of the time, are a bit surrealist and slightly out there, but in an inviting way, I think. And those kinds of lyrics show up in Tin Man. And that's the fantasy story that the Wizard of Oz has. But I think it was very much influenced by that. And just his usually beautiful melodic writing was in there. And it just, I think it worked like pretty quickly. So.
Are you still in touch with them or no? The book is done and your guys are no longer in contact.
Yeah, no, we're still, that was one of the great things that I got to keep as a younger writer, I believe, is their friendship, the friendship with the band, with Jerry and Dewey. And yeah, we're very much in touch. I mean, we text now and then and we keep up with each other with what's going on and stuff and music and book related stuff. So yeah, that's
what do you know? Yeah, do you know if they're still working on any new music or?
Yeah, I mean, I know that they both work on stuff, of course, and Jerry's writing a lot. I think writing all the time, and he usually is. And I think they just released. They have a great box set that just came out, which is supposed to be great.
Oh, really?
A collection of their material, and I know a lot of fans are happy with it, so that's worth checking out.
Sure.
And they just released a song called Remembering, I think it is. But it's really great. It's a newer track that they recorded, the band. It's definitely worth checking out, and it reflects the current position.
Well, you should tell them to come on here, and we'll play it for them and let everybody hear it.
I'm sure. Yeah.
We love to play new music for people. But a friend of mine actually went to see them right before the pandemic, maybe a couple of months before. It was somewhere, obviously, in New Jersey, and she said it was the best concert she had gone to in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
A very long time.
Yeah, I stand by that. I mean, their live show is incredible. I've seen them four or five times, six times now live, and it's so exciting and well-executed and well-crafted. And they have these newer, younger guys in the band who are these great players, and you hear all the hits you want to hear, too, with some new pieces or unexpected pieces thrown in. So it's such a great live show. I hope everybody gets to get back to that, too.
Well, let's hope we get back to live shows soon. So, I mean, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now, I got to ask you about your other books, too, since we have you on the phone. You also have Crushing, the 6-part series. What is that about?
Yeah, that's a YA, young adult fiction series. It's episodic, so it's unrelated. It's not a serial or anything. They're all different characters. And those are their first longer form books that I wrote, which is great. It was for this press company, Epic Press. So it was a great exercise for me just to exercise my fiction muscles and stuff. I had also written my master's thesis was a fun way into the longer form rock writing. I actually wrote about Bruce Springsteen for that, and that was like a 60-page piece or something. And that's when I really knew I really wanted to write a book after that.
Right. Nice. Now, Caught in the Spotlight, the band's performance anxiety and stage fright, chapter in Rags and Bones, a multidisciplinary exploration of the band. Obviously, it's about stage fright. Tell us what made you come up with that one, and is it about a specific band or just in general?
Yeah, that was actually through a friend. through a mutual kind of project that was going on, that is going on. So it's a book that's going to release via U Mississippi Press probably next year.
Oh, it's not out yet.
It's not quite out yet. Yeah, it was supposed to be out sooner, but it got held up a bit. But it's an anthology of all different writers with different takes on different aspects of the band's career. So my chapter that I gave in is about, like you said, the Stage Frights album by the band, which was released I think in 1970. And it's kind of a deep dive into that record. And I got the opportunity to I'm friends with the filmmaker who just made, I don't know if you saw, but the documentary on Robbie Robertson came out last year. It's called Once We're Brothers. It's a great movie. It's definitely worth a watch. And he actually, Daniel Rohrer's name, has connected me with one of the band's photographers at the time of Stage Fright, John Sheely. So I got to talk to him about his firsthand experience too with the working with the band and during the recording of that album at the Playhouse in Woodstock. So it's a great. I had fun writing it. So if anyone's interested in the band too, they would definitely enjoy the whole book. I would imagine just. About their career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I didn't know it was about the band. I'm sorry, based on the title, I didn't know it was about them in particular. Sorry about that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they're great too. Oh, they're great too. So, well, now, if that's not released yet, are you working on any other new material, or what do we see in the future coming out of you in regard to another book?
Well, I'm kind of working on a couple of different ideas. I'm in talks with this one artist about potentially writing or working with him on his autobiography, which would be great if that happens, and I hope to have some news there soon.
Tell us who it is, because
if it never happens, you know, like, oh, remember when you said that? Yeah, that's not going to
happen.
Hopefully, I'll totally let you know, though, if it gets become something.
Definitely come back so we can let everybody know about it for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. That'd be great. Yeah.
Other than that, I'm kind of just doing some pieces and stuff. So for the vinyl district, like every month or so, I put an interview piece out with an artist. I just released an interview with them. I got to talk to Jerry's son, actually. He's a great producer. His name is Matt Beckley, and I wrote this fun article with him. It's an interview piece. And I also got to interview this artist, Marcus Eaton, too, who worked on the David Crosby documentary. So that's a fun article, too, that's out there. So I'm trying to do those kind of things.
Nice, nice. Are you still writing for any publications other than the one you mentioned earlier?
Not regularly. I mean, I would like to be definitely more regularly associated with publication, but we'll see. I'm working on that.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to read it. I apologize that I have not yet, because I get books sent to me all the time.
Oh, sure.
And
yeah,
to be quite honest, I don't have the time to read. I'm one of the people that probably need an audio book. Is the book an audio version?
It just got signed, actually, to become an audiobook, which I'm excited about. So that should be out soon. And I understand, I get a lot of people wanting that form of reading in general nowadays. So that should come out soon.
Yeah, because, you know, when you're walking or driving, you know, you have more time, you know, when you're stationary. For me, when I'm stationary, I'm doing something else. So it's like, how can I read when I'm doing something else? But, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but, it must have killed you. The book came out in May, and you can't go on a tour to promote it. That stinks. No book signings.
I know. I mean, initially, yeah, it was very upsetting. I mean, alongside everything else that was going on, of course. But yeah, we did have some signings set up for Los Angeles and New York that had to be postponed. So I'm hoping to get to do those next year if everything kind of gets a bit better and if the touring starts again. That would be great. But I'm impressed, too, like, that the book came out anyway, in May, because it was a bit touch and go for a while in terms of publishers staying open or not staying open, and that the book stayed true to its original release date was really exciting for me. It was May 15th originally, so that I'm impressed with that, with my publisher about that aspect of it, for sure.
Well, it's only been out 5 months. How's it doing? It's got to be doing well. I mean, there's a lot of America fans, so I'm sure it's doing well.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I know it definitely sell more in terms of the numbers that I've heard. I would love them to be higher. I think, like you said, without the events and getting people to show up and having the guys come,
right.
They were going to be there. They will be there when we do them
yeah.
next year. But those definitely hike up the sales.
Great. Oh, that's great. Well, where can people get the book, Jude?
They can order it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Mm-hmm.
They are at a lot of local bookstores. They're at a lot of local Barnes & Noble stores. And also my publisher's website, Roman, R-O-W-M-A-N.com. You can buy directly from there, which is great.
Excellent. Well, if there's anything else you want to add to let folks know about you or anything else, where can people contact you if they need to? You have a website yourself or Facebook?
Yes.
Or
yes,
where
I
can
love
folks
hearing
get
from
you?
People who have read the book or who are interested in the band's history and stuff. I do have a website. It's www.judewarrenmyname.com. And my email address is on there, actually, the best email address to get me at. So, yeah, I hope to hear from people through there. And if all my articles are on that site, too, if anyone wants to check out my other writings.
Oh, great. That's great. Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us. I apologize we don't have any callers tonight. Most of our callers, they listen after the fact and download and listen. But they're lost because they didn't get your book. So guess
yeah.
what? Now they got to buy it, which is good for you. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly.
And I got my freebie, so I'm going to read it when I can. So.
Okay, good. And I'm happy to send you a copy directly to a signed copy if you want.
If you would like, you know what, Jude? If you wanted to do that, I could put it in my little treasure chest here, and when we have callers, we could give it away.
Oh, good. Sure. Okay.
That's totally up to you. But, I mean, I'd like to keep it myself. I hate when people send me stuff because I like to keep it for myself, but I don't
do that.
I give a, you know? But I'll definitely shoot you an email and give you some information on where you could send it. And I'm going to put you in my article next week, and then we'll get the book out that way, too, in the Observer newspaper over here on the East Coast in New Jersey. So. You know, we're going to hit you with a double whammy. So
excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, Jude, thank you so much. And I couldn't help myself when we reached out and when I said the first thing out of my head just got, hey, Jude, you know, you must get that a lot.
I do. Yeah. I was named after the song, so it's only to be expected.
Oh, cool.
I like it. I like hearing it.
Cool. Well, what was the last concert you got to see before everything went crazy?
Oh, man, that's such a good question. I think it was a combo maybe of in the same week, in late February, I saw my parents took me to see, actually, Bob Mould, the 80s, 90s punkish kind of guy.
We saw him at
Iridium, which was a great show. It was just him solo, but it was really good. And then we also saw the Figs. I'm friends with Pete Donnelly, who's the bass player and songwriter in that band. They've been around for a while. So we saw a great show of the Figs downtown at this club called Berlin Under A, I think. That was, I think, the last day of February on Leap Day. That was the last show I saw. But they were both really, really good. A nice way to go out, unknowingly.
Right. I know I'm itching to go to a concert. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm dying to go see some live music. There's nothing more exciting and make you feel alive to go see a great band and their sound fabulous and when they're on the money, it's just wonderful experience, and I miss it terribly. But I do love the fact that, you know, that thank God for the internet, that people are able to put their talent out there for us, and there's so many people who have talent that we never heard from before that are now blowing up on the internet, which is great. So, I mean, there is a good side to this, after all, in regard to the arts, even though, you know, no one's working. That's the saddest thing, is that these artists, I mean, that's all they have. And, you know, insurance-wise, medical and everything, they got nothing, you know, and they need to get back to work. But the people behind the scenes that make it happen, and it's just a shame. It really is.
It's really tough. Yeah.
Yeah. because music is, for me, it's my happiness, and I could tell for you it's yours too. So
yeah,
I
mean,
I
do too, and I'm thinking about what I used to spend more a lot of my time doing and my family's time, and I go out, you know, going to see these live shows and not being able to do that, like you said, it's just so, it's very disarming, where you have to kind of reconfigure your social life anyway, or your life, and like you said, it's the lifestyle, it's how these musicians, these touring musicians earn their money and live their lives, and this is very hard on them too, so we're hoping that it gets fixed soon, because we're ready to buy the tickets and show up, just has to all get better.
Well, another good thing too, maybe I would like to think, is that during this downtime that we're going to get a lot of fantastic music when this is all over, because people got to be writing like crazy. They've got to be.
I think so too, and we've been enjoying too the live streams that are put out by certain artists or just certain venues. Like we used to, my parents and I used to go to the Village Vanguard, the jazz club a lot downtown New York, they can't open, of course, but they've been doing the live some live streams like over weekends. So we like supporting the club that way and watching the acts.
Right.
I think this weekend they have like Ravi Coltrane playing, which will be great. We had to see him before in person. So that's a fun way, to get your musical kick, your live musical kick.
Right. Are you still located in the city or no?
Yeah, I'm in Manhattan. It's been weird being here during all this. I know for everyone everywhere, but just the city is usually so bustling and you thrive on being very close to people and talking to strangers, and all of a sudden it's very dangerous. Oh, no.
I know. It's like a ghost town all of a sudden. Well, compared to what it used to be. Yeah. I know. Well, I'm in New Jersey, so I'm a hop, skip, and a jump from you.
Yeah,
so,
very
you
close. Cool.
But, Well, Jude, thank you so much again for joining me. I really enjoyed our conversation. I cannot wait to read the book. And, yes, if you don't mind sending a copy, I'm more than happy to maybe steal it and maybe give it away.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. And I'll send you the article when it's done as well.
Great. I'd love to. I'll put it up on all my media channels, whatever they are.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you to Jude Warren for joining us, and pick up her new book, America, the Band, an Authorized Biography. If you are an America fan, you will love it. The parts that I did get to read, which weren't much because I don't have time, were fantastic. And, I can't imagine. How long did you spend with them, actually, to write it? I mean, what was the turnaround time for you when you – how long did it take to write it?
I did the interviews over a year and a half, probably, about their whole lives and their careers and every album that they worked on. And I kind of wrote it during that and then after that. So in my mind, I think of the project as like 2 to 3 year long thing, which was great. But it's definitely like a multi-year project, but a great bunch of years.
So what did you do, mostly telephone interviews or FaceTime stuff?
They're mostly telephone, just given that they were touring a lot of the times when we spoke, they were playing in a different city that night and stuff, and I'm based in New York. We did the first two or three interviews were done in the city in person, which was really great, and we got to see each other whenever we were in the same town, but most of them were probably done over the phone.
Cool. Nice. Oh, God. Don't mind me if I start getting questions at the last second. I don't write questions down. My mind is racing as what I want to ask you when it comes after the fact. So if I sound like I'm all over the place with my questions, it's because I don't write them down. It's just what comes to my mind. So
I like that. First thought, best thought.
Well, I prefer it that way. I prefer it that way because, like I said, it's more like we're hanging out, you know, and chatting, you know. So.
Yeah.
But again, Jude, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Jude Warren, rock author, journalist, America, the Band, an Authorized Biography. Check it out. It's at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and also at her publicist, RowanLittlefield.com, I guess, RowanLittlefield.com?
Roman.com is their technical website.
Oh, Roman. Roman.com. And that's R-W-M-A-N, folks, not R-O-M-A-N. Roman.com. Cool. I just want to write that down so I have that for when I tell people where they can get it. So that's great. Jude, again, stay safe. Thank you so much. And it was a pleasure speaking with you. Good luck with the book. And when the new one comes out, let me know.
Thank you so much. I will. And I appreciate your time. It was great talking
to
you.
Yeah. And you know what? Ask the guys if they want to get that new song out. I'm more than happy to play it for them here. And it's all it is. It's a telephone call. So, and just send me an MP3 and we'll play a new song for them.
Sure. I'll definitely let them know.
Oh, that'd be great. All right. Well, Jude, thank you so much. You have a good evening. Thank you. Keep in touch. And it was a pleasure. And I'm so glad we got to chat. Thank you so much.
Me too. Have a great night. Thank you.
All right. You too. Take care, honey. Bye-bye. Thank
Bye.
You. Bye. Oh, boy. I feel horrible I didn't get to read the book because, I mean, I get books sent to me all the time, and I just don't have time to read, folks. I'm so sorry. And also, I don't know how to read, so there you go. Now, honestly, I think I definitely am a person that would prefer an audio thing audio books. So, because, I mean, when I'm stationary, I'm doing something. So how can you read and work at the same time? But, you know, when you're driving, that's a great opportunity to listen to a book or a story of some sort. And, or if you like to do walking or anything, or even at work, if they let you wear headphones, you know, well, that might be difficult because you're trying to concentrate on the book and trying to work at the same time, so that would be difficult, but depends on what kind of work you do. So again, Jude, thank you so much for joining us, and I have to tell you, when we got in touch, instead of saying, hello, Jude, how are you, I said, hey, Jude, I couldn't help it, I just couldn't, so, and I said, oh, God, I got to kick myself, how many times has she probably heard that, you know. So anyway, we've got coming up for you. November is fully booked, folks, so I'm excited about that. We're shooting for December now. We've got coming up on Sunday the 25th. I'm excited. One of my favorite girls, Stacey Ladisoff. Oh, God, if you don't remember, I know you will. Love on a Two-Way Street. Let me be your angel. Cannot wait to have her on. I'm a fan, huge fan. And then on the 28th, we have a special time that we have on we have a special show time coming up that's going to be at 6:30. We're going to air at 6:30 on the 28th. We have author Patrick Oster, and he's got a new book out called The Obituary Writer. It's a thriller. And then at 7:30 p.m. following Patrick is the phenomenal Lucy Arnaz. Cannot wait to have her on the show. She was supposed to be with us back in February. I think it was February. And unfortunately, all her gigs got canceled due to the pandemic. So she didn't have a need to come on. But, you know, I love talking to them. Their fans love to hear from them. So it's great. And then, pardon me. November, I'm calling Semi-Monkey Month. We got a lot of monkey-related guests on Sunday, November 1st, we got Valerie Vinette. She was very close with the monkeys. She's been on the monkeys. And also same day at 12 p.m., we're going to have another special broadcast with Martin Barr. He played with Jethro Tull, and he's got a new single, new CD coming out. And he's going to grace us with his presence, and we're going to play a song for him, which is cool. And on Wednesday, the 4th of November, we've got Kit Lively. He was an artist for Mad Magazine and wrote for Mad Magazine, so that's cool too. I used to love Mad Magazine. On the 8th, we've got the folks from Blue Gorilla, and they have a new movie out called 36 Husbands, so that's going to be great. We are taking the 15th off. The 15th, I have to prep for something, so we'll be taking off the 15th. And on the 18th, we've got Tim Bruckner. if you're into Marvel, DC, the superheroes, the action flicks, he is a sculptor for these guys, and his artwork is fantastic. My God. And then on the 22nd, for JFK's anniversary of his death, I don't know if you'd call it an anniversary, but Rick Ryan and Buffy Ford Stewart is going to be on, and they both have, well, Buffy specifically has a connection to the Kennedys, and she knew Robert very well, also John Kennedy as well. And Rick, I believe, wrote a song for John F. Kennedy. And Rick is a, he's been on before. He also wrote Willie the Kid, the song for Willie Nelson. And then on the 25th, Coco Dolenz. That's Mickey Dolenz's sister. And then again, Buffy's going to be back on, and we're going to discuss the monkeys with her. So the 22nd, we're going to discuss JFK, and on, the 29th, we're going to discuss the monkeys. Ooh, on Veterans Day. Oh, my God. We got a gentleman from Hawaii reached out to me. He wrote this fantastic song about America, and it is great. We're going to play it for you, and I just thought it was apropos since it's Veterans Day as well, so... that's great. And so we're going to go from there. And I hope you all have a good night. Thank you for listening. And Jude is going to send us that autographed copy of the book in case you couldn't listen live tonight. And before we go, thank you to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kitnersville, Pennsylvania, KGBV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and other stuff in Clifton, New Jersey. Their t-shirts are on applauseradioshow.com. Check them out. Syntech Productions in Anoka Harbor, New Jersey. Oleander Public Relations in Texas. Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's sake. And the Observer newspaper. Tongue tied. The Observer in Kearney, New Jersey, and Joey Max Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey. You know, we've got a lot of swag here, folks, for Joey Max. We've got t-shirts, we've got gift certificates of free food. All you got to do is call. I reach into that little treasure chest of mine. Whatever I pull out is yours. So, and GenieBottles.com, our new family member. And artist Mario Della Casa of the Genie Bottle, he's got a great special going on, but you have to, he's going to select the lucky winner, $99 for an autographed Barbara Eden I Dream of Genie Bottle. And these are gorgeous, gorgeous. And I think the bottle is actually worth like $1,500, so... And they're gorgeous. And he's also the artist of, do you remember the flute on H.R. Puffin stuff? God, what was the flute's name? Was it Timmy the flute? It escapes me. I apologize. But he also is the artist of that. So you should check out GenieBottles.com. And I think it's Mario Della Casa Art. I got to get more information on that, on how you can get in touch with, on how you can get that flute. So... let me do that before next airing of the show so I can tell everybody where they can find information about that as well. But thank you all for listening. Again, stay safe. People are desperate right now, and can you blame them? Jesus Christ, give them some money. That's ridiculous. So since everybody's so crazy with this election, I know you probably don't want to hear it, but I'm going to end the show with be kind. Be kind, people. Come on. It's not hard to do. It really isn't. Take care. We'll see you on Sunday. Here you go. Be kind.